The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Going to have a dandy today, I can assure you of that. My good buddy David McKnight, best-selling author, of course, graduated from BYU with honors in 1997. He's been featured in Forbes, USA Today, New York Times, Fox Business, Bloomberg, MarketWatch, and more. Yahoo Finance, you name it, he's been on it. David's best-selling book, The Power of Zero, has sold well over 400,000 copies. And the updated and revised version was published by Penguin Random House in 2018. This book was recently made into it's a great documentary, by the way, The Power of Zero, The Tax Train is Coming. When his follow-up book, Tax-Free Income for Life, launched, it was also way up there in number three most sold book in the world in 2020. Wow, that's crazy. The Guru Gap. We're going to talk about that. His most recent book, where he's calling them to the carpet. He's calling out the Dave Ramseys, the Susie Ormans, on a big, big, big hole in the advice that they've been giving people on the air now for a long, long time. So it's going to be a great show. I can't wait. Let's talk a little bit about the craziness that's been going on the last week and a half. Of course, last week, stocks were hammered. Following, the White House reaction to the White House tariffs, S&P down, NASDAQ down, Dow down. They were all down. Stocks were under pressure pretty much all week long. They had a couple bumps up along the way. Fed Chairman Powell came out and said, hey, the labor market's in good shape. Long-term inflation expectations are well anchored and consistent with our inflation goal, despite higher expectations for inflation over the short run. Regarding consumer sentiment, consumers may not feel great about the economy, but guess what, folks? They're still spending, he added at the same time. That happened during the pandemic as well. The Fed's policy stance is well-positioned to wait for greater clarity on the likely effects of trade, fiscal policy, before considering any changes in monetary policy. Then, here we are, right, on a Wednesday. So it was Wednesday, 5 minutes until 1, I'm on the phone with a client. Who's not freaked out? You know, everyone's like, if people are freaked out, no, not really. They kind of understand how things go. And, you know, I could talk about tariffs until I'm blue in the face. You know, first, what is a tariff? Tariff are taxes or duties on imposed on imported goods by a government. Why are they used? Well, their intent is to protect domestic industry, encourage local production, generate government revenue, reduce reliance on foreign goods, or respond to trade policies of other nations. What is their potential impact? Well, tariffs can raise prices for consumers, affect trade relations with other countries, and influence economic growth. So here we are just getting absolutely hammered again on Monday and Tuesday. So Wednesday, I'm talking to a client on the phone who had some buffers in their account. There was some protection. It was kind of a more understanding how that works. And she said, why don't we have that on the entire portfolio? I'm like, well, some of the money you do want to have just straight up in the stock market because we don't want capped. Right? We want to go full throttle. Money you're going to need for income we have here, protected sleeve, and then full-on growth. So I'm like, and here's the thing, Julie. I could literally hang up the phone, and in 5 minutes, there'd be a tweet or an announcement about some trade policy, and this thing could just skyrocket. I hung up the phone. I went back to the corner office where I reside, and here comes Hot Rod. And Hot Rod comes around the corner and says, you won't believe what just happened. I was in his office on that phone call with the client. I said, what? He said, they just announced a pause on tariffs except for China. They're going to crank up China's tariffs to 125%. And I said, well, what happened? He said, market took off. I said, where are we? He said, we're up 2,000 points. We ended up almost 3,000 points on the Dow, like a 10% rally in one day, the third largest ever in the history of the stock market. 5 minutes after I hung up the phone with Julie. So I'm like, wow, sometimes it's good to be good, but sometimes it's really great to be lucky. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get Mr. David McKnight, best-selling author, Power of Zero guru, on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Oh, what wonderful music to bring in this show. David McKnight's joining me now live for Your Money with David Hayes. Of course, we already introduced him in the prior segment, but he is a graduate of BYU with a football in the background here on his Zoom. He's got the Guru Gap back there as well. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Dave's been just about everything out there, from New York Times, Fox Business, Bloomberg, Market Watch, you name it, he's been out. But he's also became famous for selling nearly a half of over 400,000 copies of The Power of Zero, of course, the revised version published by Penguin Random House back in 18. And then the documentary, which is pretty cool. If you want to look it up, you can. It's on Apple TV and some other places as well. I've watched it two or three times. And, he wrote The Guru Gap, which is going to call out some of the, quote, gurus in the industry, and a little controversial maybe for a lot of the disciples of Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman and others, but we're going to get to that in just a little bit. I warned people last week, Dave, that we're going to get into the dirt a little bit on one of the biggest, I think, I don't know how you want to call it, just one of the things we need to expose that you need to not take to the bank, and we'll get to that later in the show. Dave, before I came up to the station today, I got on to debtclock.org, usdebtclock.org, and saw that we're way past $36 trillion, on our way to $37 trillion in debt. Of course, the Power of Zero philosophy is that you're not going to be able to cut your way out of this, whether it's benefits or reduced spending. I saw the little Doge clock there, and the amount of savings per taxpayer was just minuscule compared to the amount that we owe each individual taxpayer. Or raise taxes, and that's been our motto here, that we're going to have to raise more revenue. Of course, the tariffs were designed to potentially do that as well. I talked about that in the first segment. So tell us what you're thinking now. Here we are with Trump in office. Maybe the tax cuts could get extended a little bit further, which always gives us an opportunity to talk about more things. We had the tariffs that took a pause yesterday on Wednesday to see where that goes. But, yeah, we're still $36 trillion debt any way you rack it up.
Yeah, so I'm really bullish on the extension of the Trump tax cuts. Trump has talked about this one big beautiful bill. He wants to get everything through Congress all at the same time, and Mike Johnson is talking about that happening before Memorial Day, which is, you know, they think it'll be happening towards the end of May. So I think they're going to extend the Trump tax cuts. I actually didn't feel all that great about it. I felt like with these tariffs that he was losing a lot of his political capital. But now that he's changed course, I think he's sort of regained some of that political capital. And I think that he's going to have enough votes. He took a Lee Stefanik off of the ambassadorship to the UN just so that they could have that margin of victory to be able to pass this stuff through budget reconciliation. So I think they're going to get another 8 years through budget reconciliation of these Trump tax cuts. The only downside of that is it's going to cost the taxpayers another $5 trillion unless they cut spending elsewhere. So you're right. I mean, the debt just gets worse and worse and worse. We're looking at $2 trillion per year over the next 10 years, and you add another $5 trillion on top of that. If we have the Trump tax cuts extended, that's going to push us to $60 trillion of debt by 2035. That's a big deal. In fact, Penn Wharton has finally sort of warmed up to this whole national debt discussion. They recently put out a survey, a study that says that if we don't write our fiscal ship of state by 2040, debt to GDP will be 200%. And at that point, no combination of raising spending or reducing taxes will arrest the financial collapse of our country. So we're sort of painting ourselves into a corner here. We extend the Trump tax cuts. That means we have 2034 through 2040 to get things right. And every year that you postpone means the fix on the back end is even more draconian and more austere.
So I looked at the debt to GDP also on the usdebtclock.org, 133% debt to GDP, so it's getting there quicker than we probably ever even dreamed it would happen. So I actually talked to our Congresswoman Erin Hauschen from our 9th district here in Indiana. She's on the Reconciliation Committee. And we talked about, hey, what's going to stick and what's not going to stick. And, you know, we went through standard deductions and other things. But we got down to no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, and no tax on overtime. So she said, again, explaining reconciliation, if you give something here, you have to make it up over here. You have to figure out how to pay for it. So no tax on tips, she said they can reconcile that. So she anticipates that actually happening. No tax on Social Security, she said there's no way to reconcile that. And no tax on overtime, she said absolutely no way to reconcile that. So it looks like we may get no tax on tips, but I don't work for tips, so it doesn't affect me. But it does affect a lot of servers out here at our local wonderful restaurants here in Bloomington, Indiana. So just a little inside information from that Reconciliation Committee, Dave.
Well, it does make you wonder how creative people or employers are going to be, you know, if they start paying people really small salaries and then saying everything else was a tip, right?
So, well, you know, interesting here in Indiana, our minimum wage is $7.95. So someone asked me the other day, what's minimum wage? I said, I have no idea. No one can work for minimum wage. So I had to go into our break room and look at the big poster on the wall. So you're right. I may just start paying everyone $7.95, and everything else, guys, is tips. I don't have to pay Social Security wages on it.
Tax-free.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like when they had the SALT thing go through, right, when the limitation on state, and they started saying out in Jersey, well, what if you just donated money to the state of New Jersey, and that would satisfy your requirement for your real estate taxes, and donations, of course, were taxable. So, saying what you said, Dave, I said I still think that at some point we have to raise revenues, and again, it may come in the form of tariffs, it may come in the form of usage taxes, sales taxes, whatever. I have no idea. All I know is that there are trillions and trillions of dollars stacked up in these tax-deferred retirement accounts. You've been pounding the drum forever. I've been pounding the drum. You know, my book, I wrote 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, because we anticipated those tax cuts expiring at the end of this year. And then, boom, we were going to at least go back to where we were before. And as you've put it, that doesn't keep us up at night. But what keeps us up at night is what the Congressional Budget Office says pretty much every February and March, where tax rates have to go. Do you have that off the top of your head?
Gosh, you know,
I didn't write
it
down, but I know it's way up, like double.
Yeah, like David Walker, former Comptroller General, said that effective tax rates have to double. Back in 2008, Congressional Budget Office said the, you know, back when we had the 15, that would have to become 25. The 25 would become 66, and the 35 would become 88, something like that. So it's an effective doubling of tax rates over time. I mean, that's how much revenue they need sort of infused into the system. It's just, you know, we are spending our way. I mean, we're spending way more money than we have. We're putting on the nation's credit card and expecting our kids to pay for it, and that's just wrong. I actually no longer think it's going to be the kids that pay for it. I think it's going to be us. I think it's going to be you and me, and all taxpayers are going to have to foot the bill for this, because you know, you can't keep kicking the can down the road forever. And I think that when the Trump tax cuts expire, I used to think the tax rates were going to rise gradually. I think we're going to get to 2034 and they're going to say, hey, we got 6 years before we hit this point of no return. We've got to raise massive amounts of revenue right now. So I think we're going to see a precipitous rise of tax rates in 2034. Just because we're going to be so hard up for cash at that point, we're going to have to take drastic measures.
You know what's interesting, and I talked to you about this last time, when they pushed the minimum distribution age out to 75 for those born after 1960, I said, why would they do that? Well, what you just said is really why I think they did it. They're smarter than we give them credit for. It's pretty smart to think, okay, we have the peak of the baby boom generation turning 75, and that year, and there's going to be maybe $80 to $100 trillion in tax deferred retirement accounts. And oh, by the way, tax rates just doubled from 2034 to 2035, and I have to start taking money out of my retirement accounts. I don't care if you have $10 million, $20 million in a retirement account. If you don't have any idea what the cost of that money is going to be when you decide to take it out, you might as well have nothing. And so I'm thinking, okay, if we get a little longer runway here, the next maybe eight more years of lower taxes, then it gives people an incredible opportunity to start slowly moving or methodically moving money from taxable to tax-free. And Dave, I'm not telling you anything that you haven't been preaching, probably to the point where your wife is like, well, Dave, will you quit talking about this, please? I don't talk about it with my wife.
Right. You know, I think people don't, they just don't realize how low taxes are today. They don't realize we're at historically low tax rates because maybe they're just not old enough to remember when tax rates were much higher. I mean, I know you love to tell the story of your parents back when what tax rates were in the 70s, but people forget that the highest marginal tax rate in the 70s was 70%. Highest marginal tax rates in the early 60s was 89. In the wake of World War II, it was, it was 94. And so we just, don't we can't fathom, because it hasn't happened in our lifetime, we can't fathom that tax rates could go dramatically higher than they are today. And we have to remember that tax rates ebb and flow over time based on the needs of the federal government. And we are marching into a future where they will need huge infusions of cash just to be able to pay the interest on the national debt. I mean, 60 trillion, and we're just, it'd be one thing if we had this massive economic boom that was going to keep pace and keep that debt to GDP ratio at a manageable level, but that's just not what economists are predicting. They're predicting 200% by 2040 to 2043, and that really is the point of no return.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with David McKnight, best-selling author of The Power of Zero, The Guru Gap, which we'll get to in a couple of segments. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. David McKnight, best-selling author, The Power of Zero made him famous, over 400,000 copies sold. He's had a revised version. He's had Look Before You LERP, You Have Tax-Free Income for Life, launched in November of 2020. Finished the week as the number third most sold book in the world. That's incredible. I know when I launched my book back in 2019 to 18-19, we had a pretty good push on Amazon, got it up to number four on the Amazon Daily Bestseller List. We're grateful for that. That's pretty impressive, Dave. And I know we've set the tone here. We're at the lowest, tax rates are at the lowest they've been in our lifetimes, for sure. And you mentioned the top marginal brackets. It's not so much about the top. It can be the bottom. They kind of float up together, mentioning my mom and dad's tax return from 1973, before my sister was born. Three boys at home, combined income $16,000, a standard deduction of $2,000, $500 per kid, and they still paid $2,600 in federal income tax, 20%. So it's not just about all the people making all that money, but it's also the bottom brackets as well. So let's talk about some of the things and strategies and gotchas that we need to inform people about when it comes moving from taxable to tax-free, Dave.
Well, there's a temptation to say, "Hey, look, I've got all this money in my tax deferred bucket. It's a ticking time bomb. I'm in a business partnership with the IRS, and every year they get to vote on what percentage of my profits they get to keep, and so not a great business partnership." So there's this sort of urgency to get all this money shifted to tax-free and to do it as quickly as you possibly can. But you got to remember that the whole goal is to shift this money slowly enough that you don't rise into a tax bracket that gives you heartburn, but quickly enough that you can get all the heavy lifting done before tax rates go up for good. And I saw a lot of people back when we thought that tax rates were, before anybody thought that Trump was going to get reelected, when they were talking about tax rates, the Trump tax cuts expiring, people are trying to get, $1 million worth of Roth conversion executed in 2 years, and they were rising into these huge tax brackets to be able to pull it off. And so really, you got to stretch that tax obligation out over as many years as possible. And now that it looks like the Trump tax cuts are going to get extended, we now have, if you count the year 2025, you now have 9 years during which to take advantage of historically low tax rates once those tax exemptions go through. And so I'm a huge fan, as you know, David, of the 24% tax bracket. I think that's the sweet spot in the Trump tax cuts. The 24% is still lower than the future version of the 22, which is 25. And the 24 is only 2% more than the 22, and it allows you to go all the way up to $394,000 of taxable income. So that's an extra $188,000 in that above and beyond the 22% tax bracket. So if you've got huge amounts of money in the IRA, in your IRA, avail yourself of the 24% tax bracket, because for 2% more, you can get all that extra heavy lifting done and take advantage of a historically low tax. I think that come 2034, David, we're going to look back on the 24% tax bracket as a good deal of historic proportions. And so I think that really is the sweet spot in the Trump tax cuts.
Well, I'm definitely a Rothaholic. I've admitted to that. I've even went to my whatever they call that, Rothaholic Anonymous or whatever, to make sure but I don't want to be cured of it. The other thing that was going to sunset was the federal estate tax as well. We were at $12, $13 million. It was going to get cut back in half. So we had a lot of people who were, you know, owning businesses and different things that were worth $20, $30, $40 million, right, panicking to do some really crazy and creative planning because the IRS said, well, we will not claw back on that. Don't really, haven't really heard much about the federal estate tax. I'm assuming it would stick where it is today. And I've told people, listen, you might just tap the brakes a little bit until after the election and see before you do any crazy planning. So, but you never know. The federal estate tax has been all over the place since I started in 1994. It was $600,000 per person. It went to $1,000,000, $2,000,000, $5,000,000, $10,000,000, went away to zero under Bush number two, and then back to, I think, $5,000,000 and then to $10,000,000. And I mean, you know, so it's been all over the place as well, not just our tax code. So any thoughts about the federal estate tax?
Well, the estate tax is a sort of a funny thing because it's not about what your net worth is today. It's what your net worth is going to be when you die. And so you may not think that you have an estate tax problem. So you have to run the numbers out and say, what is my net worth likely to grow to over the balance of my life? And then you're predicting two things. What is my net worth going to be when I die? And what is the tax landscape going to look like when I die? That's like trying to hit a moving target in the dark. It's pretty hard to manage. But this much I can say, David, is that as we slowly slide into insolvency, I think they're going to be looking in all quarters for new revenue. And I think that the estate tax is definitely something that they're going to use to infuse more revenue into the system.
And the Roth IRA does not protect you from that. But you could use a life insurance policy in a trust that would be tax-free. And I think life insurance, I don't think that's, I mean, maybe the accumulation of cash, maybe that could be, because that has popped up a few times, you know, in the last 20 years. But I just don't see IRS code 7702 being thrown in the ditch when it seems to be, you know, the most sacred of the tax code, and that's the tax-free treatment of life insurance. What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, you know, they floated about every 8 or 9 years. They floated it with the Simpson-Bowles. And then, you know, of course, the lobbyists from the life insurance companies sort of sprang to life and shot it down from about 12 different directions. So they floated. It's a huge source of not a source of revenue. It's a huge hole in the U.S. government's revenue that they miss every single year. And so it always pops up as something that could come under the scope were they to really try to get their house in order. But I think that, you know, every time it's happened, it's gotten shot down, it's gotten shot down at the last hour. And so I think that historically, every time they've talked about taking this away, they've always said, hey, whoever has the bucket of money, whoever has these life insurance policies before the rule changes gets to keep it and continue to put money into it under the old rule for the rest of their lives. We call that a grandfather clause. I think that's likely to happen moving forward. And so I generally like to position life insurance as it's free from legislative risk if history serves as a model.
You know, and insurance companies have favor because you go back during the Great Depression and who bailed us out? It was the insurance companies. And they were given some special rules of repatriation that'll really, you know, I think they may have to. But I mean, we, you know, that was a long time ago. So maybe they'll say, screw it. We're going to tax it anyway. And we don't really care. You know, going back to the Roth conversion real quick, moving money from taxable to tax-free, you know, mathematically, you could say, well, what if I just did it all and paid 37%? Well, then you have the net investment income tax on top of that that pays for the Affordable Care Act. That's another 3.8%. But in reality, if you did put a time value of money calculation to that, and we just did a ton of Roth conversions, Dave and I were recording this right after we had, you know, several days of decline in the stock market, then a big, massive historic recovery on Wednesday. Tons of Roth conversions Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and then boom, here it happened. We got a lot of it back. So I have an 80-year-old client whose son's very involved, and they actually are doing a Wall Street Journal article on it right now about why she would do a $2 million Roth conversion. And I'm like, well, here's the reason. Because she may live another 15 or 20 years, and then when her kids get it, they don't have to touch it for another 10 years. So I use my case as an example. My wife and I are both 55. We have a son who's exactly 30 years younger. Because we had him at 30. And let's say the old man does a $200,000 Roth conversion, and it cost me $80,000. And then it doubles every 10 years at 7.2. So it goes from 2 to 4 to 8, right? And then maybe I die. So it goes 55, 65, 75, so 2, 4, 8. My wife takes it over. She lives to 95, 1.6, 3.2 million. My boy gets it. Will, I have one, as you well know. You have seven. So probably not as impactful for your kids as it would be for mine. Then if he's smart enough, he can leave it in a Roth for 10 years and double it again to $6.4 million all tax-free because the old man did a single Roth conversion at 55, $200,000. And I always say, you know, my mom used to always say, I'm so glad I have a girl to take care of me when I get old because boys typically aren't wired that way. But if you want your son to come visit your graveside, do that, because if he isn't going to come visit me and say, thank you, Daddy, for that Roth conversion when you were 55, he ain't going to come to the graveyard for nothing. But, Dave, that is a reason that someone even older may consider doing a Roth conversion, more from a legacy or a family legacy standpoint.
Oh, sure. I mean, then you think about, okay, so, you know, your kid, if you leave it in the IRA, which I think is the worst possible place to have money when you die, and Ed Slott has said that over and over and over again. Just think about it this way. Your kid inherits your IRA. They inherit it at a period in their life when tax rates are much higher than they are today because it's post-2034. They're at their highest earning years, and they have fewer deductions than they've ever had in their life. So they're gonna realize that income right on top of all their other income and pay tax on it at their highest marginal tax bracket, which is going to be dramatically higher than what you might be paying right now if you did a Roth conversion. And so I just think it makes a ton of sense. And then you, I think there's two types of kids that inherit these IRAs. The first one says, I'm going to spend it all right away. Mm-hmm. And so then they realize the income all in 1 year. And the other person says, I don't need the money. And then they forget about it. And then they get to the 10th year and they've got to realize all that money as income all in the 10th year. And so I don't think there's a lot of people that inherit this money. They're going to be like, okay, what is 1/10 of it? You know, that I'm going to liquidate each and every year so I can keep my tax liability low. That's just not how people are going to do it. They're either going to spend the money right away, pay huge tax, or wait until the very end because they forgot about it and pay huge tax.
The only thing I've done personally, I keep enough in my tax deferred retirement account that at 70 and a half, I'm going to start using it as my charitable giving trust, if you want to say it. And then when I die, it's all going to go to the Boys and Girls Club and all the other charities that we support. So there is a reason to have some money in a traditional IRA for the purpose of giving. All right, Dave, we're going to take a break. When we come back, this is what I want to talk about, right? So 2 weeks ago, I had Tom Hegna on my show. What a gem to our industry, right? Tom Hegna's been, and you know, every time I talk to him, he tells me he's retired, but I don't think that's really possible. He does play golf 2 or 3 times a week, plays pickleball, as you well know. You know him well. But, you know, he is very, very good at explaining why guaranteed lifetime income is so important. And a lot of it comes down to his longevity risk, which is the longer you live, a lot of things can happen. And one of them is a sequence of return risk. And you have flat out called out the gurus, whether Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, and others, who have forever said I'll tell you what, there was an article written by Yahoo Finance, you probably have seen it. It says, author says Dave Ramsey is completely ignorant of sequence of return risk. Questions whether $1 million is really enough for retirement. I mean, I see you grinning right now because I'm sure you got a few arrows slung at you because people love Dave Ramsey, right? They worship the ground he walks on. And he's done a wonderful job of helping people get out of debt, stay out of debt, you know, build great relationships and all that. But when it comes to this topic of sequence of return risk, he's just flat out wrong. We're going to come back, get Dave McKnight's opinion of the guru gap when we come back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. David McKnight, the best-selling author, is on the phone with me. And Dave, I'm going to jump right into it because one of the things that has driven me crazy and pretty much almost wrecked me several times driving down the road listening to Dave Ramsey is, hey, if you buy a group of mutual funds, you're going to average 8 to 12% per year, and you can take out that money every year and live comfortably, and that's why you need $1 million from Social Security, you're going to be just fine. And I would, you know, I have a platform to disagree with that. It's not even disagreeing. It's based on math and science, right? That this is not true. And you wrote the book, The Guru Gap, that flat out called out on the mat that this is wrong. Talk about it.
Yeah. So Dave Ramsey has famously said that if you put your money in good mutual funds, and he never really defines what those are, but good mutual funds, you're going to get 12% linear rates of return. which means year over year over year, the mutual fund company is going to deposit 12% into your bank account, right? That's sort of how he describes it. And what that should do, if accounting for inflation, you could very comfortably take out 8% per year. So if you have $1 million in your IRA day one of retirement, you could take out 8% per year adjusted for inflation every year thereafter. Okay, so that's $80,000 of income. That's great. Well, the only problem is when people that I respect, like Dr. Wade Fowle, mm-hmm. out of Princeton, an American college, he's crunched the numbers. He says, look, if you have no, by the way, he says 100% stocks, no bonds. He says, if you have 100% stock portfolio and you take 8% out per year, you will run out of money 2 out of 3 times, 63% of the time, not even a coin flip, 63% of the time, you will run out of money in advance of life expectancy. So, while I always say, Dave Ramsey, if you're making 50 but spending 60, Dave Ramsey is precisely the person you should be talking to right about now. But when it comes to sort of spending down your retirement savings in the most efficient way and wringing the most efficiency out of your retirement savings and increasing the likelihood that your money lasts as long as you do, Dave Ramsey is precisely not the person you should be talking to. I mean, I sent the manuscript to Wade Fowle, who ended up writing the foreword for it. He said, Dave Ramsey is like 180 degrees wrong on some of this stuff. He says, if he were any more wrong, he'd be veering his way back towards right again. That's how wrong he is on this stuff. So it's mind-boggling that someone with his platform isn't willing to pay attention to math and actuarial science, but it made for great fodder for a book. And and he's not the only one that gets this stuff wrong, but he's really is the star of the show and the primary culprit.
So Dave, obviously Tom Hegness spoke on this too. So you could have guaranteed lifetime income with annuities and still have money in the stock market, but it's not money you're going to be pulling out each and every month. I would say manage your money like you're a pension fund. Money that I'm going to use like today or next week or next month, that's going to be invested differently than money I'm going to use 10 years from now. In fact, Putnam put out a piece right here. So think about 2000, 2001, 2002. If you're assuming you're going to make 8% and you don't, and you lose 46% over 3 years, folks, you're out of money in like 7 years. So Putnam put a good piece out right here that says $1 million portfolio, 5% withdrawal annually, increasing with inflation, invested in 60% stocks, 30% bonds, 10% cash, $1 million. In 1980, 10 years later, you had 1.7 million. If you retired in 1990, 10 years later, you had 1.86 million. If you retired in 2000, in 10 years, you had a negative balance of 472,000, which meant you ran out of money about seven years in. It's a real thing. It's a thing that needs to be addressed. And I'm hopeful that people, once they do go to an advisor, which Dave recommends you talk to an advisor, that they say, you know what, that one he's got wrong. Everything else, okay, we'll go with that. Because I think you're exactly right. If you're making 60 and you're spending 100, you probably should pay attention to those baby steps. But when it comes to, you know, your peak of the mountain and now it's time to start taking money out, just turn the radio off. Quit listening to it. So, Dave, we appreciate you taking them on. Have you had some flack? Have you had some arrows slinged your way over it? Or have most people been encouraging?
Of course, on my YouTube channel.
And have you had any reaction from the Ramsey camp at all on that particular topic directly?
Nothing from the Ramsey camp yet. I was hoping to elicit some sort of response. I did get a cease and desist letter from Ken Fisher, which he wasn't real happy about some of the things I'd said on my YouTube channel, which incidentally, I also ended up saying in my book, and I had to remove that part because I'm not willing to take on a guy that's worth $8 billion. So, but you know, that was one of the obstacles in writing this book is I had to muster up the courage to take on people. Dave Ramsey's almost worth $1 billion, right? You know, Susie Orman's worth $100 million. These are people with really deep pockets. And, I'm calling them out on through a book, through a major publisher, and, it's never really been done before. So I was a little nervous waiting for the other shoe to fall, but that was back in December. So here we are in April. I think we're sort of out of the woods, but you never really know. But it was definitely a different book for me to write. And it was pretty nerve wracking along the way.
So we're going to take another break, come back and have one final segment with you, Dave, just on some final thoughts. And also what's next for you too. I want to find out what you have in your little mind up there, big mind working in. What are you working on next? I've got a few projects I've been thinking about as well. We'll be right back with Dave McKnight. It's Your Money with David Hayes. John Mellencamp to bring us back. You know Mellencamp lives here in town. Did you know that, McKnight?
I did not know that, though that does not surprise me based on some of his lyrics.
Small town.
Small town.
Little pink houses, right. Yeah. You know, he lives here. Look, my wife went to high school with his daughter, of all things. So, yeah, he's been around a long time. Big supporter of Indiana University, as you probably can see in the my background, an Indiana basketball jersey there. So I'm here at the WGCL studios at One City Center. David McKnight's been my guest, of course, best-selling author, of course, best known for The Power of Zero. Sold over 400,000 copies. We just talked about The Guru Gap that launched in December of 2024. It finished the week at number 8 on the USA Today's bestseller list and was the top-selling business book in the world. Crazy, man. So you're getting the word out. That's great. So what's next for David McKnight? What do you have going on?
I just finished a book. It's a financial parable, and it's aimed towards the younger generations. It's aimed towards the millennials and the Gen Zers. And based on my research, those generations haven't saved as much money as their baby boomer and Gen X forebears. They don't have the same investment understanding and sort of same willingness to abide by time-tested investing principles in their forebears. And so I decided to write a book that that addresses specifically that demographic on how to become a tax-free millionaire. And I did it a little bit different. I mean, you probably remember my book. I don't know if you ever read The Volatility Shield.
Oh, yeah,
so it's
sure.
sort of a financial parable, financial novella. So I did it in financial parable format because I think the younger generations are more likely to finish the book if there's a cool plot and a cool M. Night Shyamalan twist ending at the end, which is something I always like to do in my fiction story. So that's just finished. We're shopping it out to publishers even as we speak. And so I'm excited for people to sink their teeth into that.
Yeah, you know, my theory with baby boomers, my dad was one of the very first baby boomers, born in 1947. And, you know, no one told them until it was way too late what they needed to do to save for retirement because everyone in front of them had pensions and Social Security. You stayed at the same job for 35, 40 years. You were set. You didn't have to worry about the stock market or having a big nest egg. But the baby boomers said to their kids, like the millennials, hey, you have a job? Or then we say to our kids, hey, do you have a 401k? You need to do this now. You can't afford not to do this. But there definitely is a gap there. And I haven't really picked up on the young kids, like what's going on there. Like my son's 24, and I just made his very first IRA contribution, which is crazy because I should have been doing this since he was 13 years old. But I mean, I see some people that are in their 30s and 40s, some millennials that have saved a lot of money. And I think it's attributed to the people they worked with who were being paternalistic or maternalistic, hey, you need to do this. Or, you know, their parents have gotten involved. So can't wait to hear the book. I'm thinking 2025, The Final Drive, Overtime, which is our overtime stretch here. And, you know, but there's a lot of things to talk about. I mean, right. I mean, we can reiterate some of the things that we believe that will happen and where we're headed, where we're likely to end up. We can talk about the new tax laws with Secure Act 2.0. We talk about my philosophy on why age 75, right? And a lot of fun things to talk about. So we're going to see. Let this thing pass. Maybe let my book kind of burn off here. We ordered the last tranche of them. So hopefully when the bell rings December 31st, I'll only have maybe one or two copies left for a mementos down the road. So, Dave, thank you for being part of the show. Anything I can ever do to help you, please let me know. And hopefully I'll run into you at an event sometime soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Dave.
All right, man. I'll let you go. Have a good one. Tell Felice
right,
hello.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll do.
All right, guys, we're going to take the final break and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hopefully you enjoyed that with Mr. McKnight. He and I have known each other a really long time. He's younger than me just by a little bit, but I've always looked at him as a mentor and really was hooked onto the message of moving yourself out of the crosshairs of higher taxes coming. So obviously we still believe that's the case, even, you know, with potential tariffs and increasing revenue. Maybe we have great immigration and bring more people into the tax-paying base. Who knows? But I do know this, there's only one thing that we can control for the most part, and that is the taxes on our IRAs, 401ks, and get those suckers over to tax-free as quick as possible, leaving a reasonable amount of money in those IRAs to do your charitable giving when you get 70 and a half, and then when you die, just leave it all to charity. That's been my philosophy, and I'm sticking to it. Hey, I want to give a shout-out. I saw Dirk Bland this week, Kenny Bland Auctions. He said they're as busy as ever. Visit them online at kennyblandauctions.com and the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with that proper estate planning. give them a call, 812-323-8300. And, oh, by the way, remember I had Jolene Dixon on last week, I believe, and we were talking Social Security, and we talked about the government offset provision, how they did away with that, the Fairness Act. Well, people are getting checks in the mail. So I just talked to my good buddy Lee, a fireman that was surprised by a big check that hits his account. I talked to a lady, a client of mine that was a civil service out of Crane, who was getting her deceased husband's Social Security, but was being offset because she had a pension that was uncovered. Boom, her Social Security went up from $600 to $2,300 a month. So they said this is under promise and over deliver from the Social Security Administration. So kudos to that. They said, hey, maybe six more months before we can even do this. And bang, we're seeing it happen now. So if that's you and you haven't got your check yet, just stay, stay patient. It's coming. All right, we're going to take the long break. I'm going to be back next week. We'll do a little more investment-related stuff. And then I'll be gone the following week on a trip out to Hawaii for a conference, taking my son with me. So that should be a lot of fun. And my wife, it'll be a lot of fun. So anyway, that's it for me. Hope you enjoyed the show, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.